Today, I'm joined by Carrie Ann Chisholm. Carrie Ann is a researcher and curator currently pursuing her PhD in curating in practice at both the University of Reading and Zurich University of the Arts. She holds a BA in Fine Art from Oxford Brookes University and an MA in Museums, Galleries, and Contemporary Culture from the University of Westminster. She has held curatorial positions at the National Gallery of the Cayman Islands, Tate Exchange Program, and Oxford Futures Forum at the University of Oxford. And she was also a specialist lecturer at the Oxford Brookes University. Carrie, thank you for being with us here today on ArtBeat. It's great to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's so good to be here.
Yes, I'm excited to talk to you about your research and get into it a little bit more. Okay, so for those of us new to you and your work, can you tell us a bit about your background? So how did you get into curating?
So when I was, how far back should I go? I think the first time that I was introduced to the gallery, I was in high school. So a lot of the young people that are like 7 years old and in like year four and year three that are coming to the gallery for tours, like my heart is just so excited because I didn't actually explore the space until I was probably like 16, 17. And I was like, I didn't know this space existed. So I did my work experience. And then after work experience, I applied for the Deutsche Bank National Gallery internship. So it was a year-long internship that I did before going off to university. And I remember one of the first exhibitions that I worked on with Natalie at the time, so Natalie Urquhart, which is now our director and the chief curator. And she just introduced me to this whole new world of lighting and putting artworks on the wall and actually thinking about how visitors and the audience move into the space. And I was like, what is this magic? So then over that course of the year, like, I had conversations with her, got to find out a little bit more about what curatorial work is, what is the responsibility of a curator. And then I went off to university and I did my BA in fine art. So I wanted to understand the practical side of working with artworks to be able to be a curator and understanding, like, you know, that like magical genius when like an artist creates something and how difficult it is to release that into someone else's care. That's my journey.
Yeah, what a journey it is. Yeah. But I like that, you know, when you step into a space as just a museum visitor, you know, and you learn something or you see interesting things, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's, then you realize, wait a minute, like, this is somebody's job to put this all together. Like, how cool is that, you know? All of this has to come from somewhere, and usually a team of people, you mm-hmm. know, installing these exhibitions, coming up with the concept. So it's a pretty cool, you know, path to recognize that, wait a minute, this is something I can do, and this is a really exciting thing that I can pursue.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, yeah, what you were saying, going back to visitors coming into a space, and it's like, oh, yeah, you know, sometimes you can take it for granted because it is that seamless, but it, you know, most of the time it is that seamless process of exhibitions are flipped or you see artwork on the wall, and there's this whole world that happens behind it, and so many people that are engaged in different aspects of an exhibition coming together and going onto the walls. It's a whole like universe in itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, at its most basic, an exhibition is just a display of works in mm-hmm. a public setting, you know. So whether that we would be at an art museum, you know, and it could be based on a certain theme or style of artworks, or it could be a solo exhibition mm-hmm. of one artist's work, or if we're talking about, say, a history museum, then we could be talking about more of an educational exhibition on a specific, you know, period in history or event. So exhibitions are kind of a broad-ranging concept, and you are interested in exhibitions as a tool for social activism. So can you elaborate on what that means?
Yes. So before I kind of touch on that point, I think that, you know, what you're saying is so important for audiences that don't fully understand what exhibitions are and the different formats that they take, as well as curatorial work. And I think that, you know, as you were saying, that there's so many different ways that an exhibition or artworks can come together. So that could be, you know, as you were saying, like within a museum context or outside of a museum context. So you have this, I think you have different ways that an exhibition is basically a tool. You know, it's a tool that you engage different different types of artwork to say something, to do something, whether that is an educational role or it's bringing a community together or speaking about specific things. So I think that, yeah, when I think about exhibitions and really what, as a curator or as a cultural practitioner, what my interest is, it's looking at how to use exhibitions as an outreach tool. So thinking about ways that that exhibitions can be put together, so ways that people can interact with artwork, come into a space, whether that is an outdoor space or whether that's an indoor space, whether that's within an institution or not, and thinking about how their engagement with those artworks in this space can help them to acquire social capital. And then alongside acquiring social capital, thinking about how that can then be converted into different types of capital. So that's one way when I think about like outreach and engagement with audiences and communities. But then the other side is that social activism. And I think what's really beautiful about art, artworks, the production of artworks, the interaction of artworks, and then how that can be, how those can be brought together into a space, is that it has this really beautiful way of breaching really difficult topics. So thinking about hard subjects that we wouldn't really know how to begin to put the words together without offending people, you know. And it's not that that we're trying to find a space where everyone agrees, because that's not possible, but thinking about how can we start a conversation without anyone being on the defense, you know. So having a conversation where everyone kind of comes in, it's like, oh, this is really interesting, what is this about? So when I think about exhibitions as a tool for activism, I think of it as a space where it can educate about different ways of understanding and knowing and being, and then also it being used as a safe zone. So this, it's something that I've kind of recently started thinking about, but as a safe zone for people to step into, to express themselves, and for others to understand who they are. So kind of like an amnesty zone.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's important, an important point to raise, too, because museums often play that role, or we strive to play that role, you know, where we are this neutral, safe space that we, you know, we present artifacts or objects on display, mm-hmm. and we do try and tell a story, but, you know, it's a place where we're trying to present information fairly and accurately and with sensitivity, mm-hmm. and, yeah, you know, it's, I feel like there's a lot of fraught discussions that can be had in our current culture.
Absolutely.
And, you know, comment sections on online or social media. It's nice to have an exhibition as a space, like you said, that people can step into, mm-hmm. and I like that as an amnesty zone, how you said that. So the nature of exhibitions is that they're often temporary. Mm-hmm. So how do you think that a temporary show can have a lasting impact?
But yeah, that's something that I've been thinking about a lot recently, is that temporality of exhibitions, and thinking about how do we create lasting impact beyond how temporary an exhibition is. You know, sometimes it's a couple of weeks, sometimes it's a couple of months, or might even go into a year. But, you know, how do you have kind of long lasting impact? And within that, there's kind of two things I've been thinking about. One is kind of a lot of what you do at the National Gallery is thinking about supporting programs. And how do you create programming that reaches the community beyond just looking at an exhibition or being within the exhibition space, but thinking about specific workshops or talks and lectures that actually bring a space or create a space for discussion? So, you know, there's that kind of shifting of education and mindset as a supporting part of an exhibition. But then you have the other side of it that I've been thinking about, is how do you disrupt spaces or disrupt thinking or disrupt ways of being or ways of knowing within that small, that short time frame of an exhibition. So that's something that I've been kind of thinking about, is that experimental space within exhibition setups. Still working on that. Come back to me in a few months' time.
Will do. And I like that you touched on programming, because that is something that we try and do at the National Gallery, is activate our exhibitions through programming And I think an interesting example of that was our recent poetry event that we had that you were in attendance at. So that was, for the current show that's on display right now, is All the Coals We Left in the Fire, which is a solo exhibition by Nisaria Sakhuchelet. And since Nisaria herself is an accomplished poet, we hosted this poetry open mic night. And we didn't know, we hadn't done an event like that before, so we weren't sure, you know, how many people were going to show up. We put out, I think, about 10 or 15 chairs, hoping that they would all the seats would get filled. But I think we had over 50 people in the end in the room. It was, this event was so well attended and so popular. And there was a really, like, there was a some kind of magic in that room that night. I don't know, there was no recipe for it. It was just this organic meeting of minds and hearts. And we had a list of selected poets who were, you know, scheduled to perform. But then we had also a lot of audience members who just in that moment felt moved to come and share, you know, and it was clear that this was a safe space for people to engage in some discussions about aspects of our current culture and identities that are maybe a bit challenging to talk about. But for whatever reason, that night in that room, it was this beautiful space of sharing and vulnerability. And you even got on the mic, Carrie-Anne, and shared a piece of your poetry as well. So I think that is kind of speaks to the power that exhibitions can have through their programming, you know. And I think it's just putting these things on, you know, build it and hope that they will come. And
yeah, I think that the, you know, touching on that very last thing that you said, build it and hope that they would come, that's something I've been thinking a lot about is, you know, how do you make sure that people come? And you can't as someone that puts together, organizes an exhibition or organizes a program or an event, you can't really ensure that people are going to come. It's just that, like, having that hope and creating that magical safe space. And I think that's something that night, that it felt like magic. There was something so beautiful about the people that were in the space and the space itself and how it was activated by the sharing of, you know, there were so many poems that really, you know, you could feel the heartbreak, you could feel the joy, you could feel the frustration, and it just created this beautiful space that people just felt so comfortable to be vulnerable. And I think that, you know, it, you know, as you're saying that, I did get on the mic, and it was the first time in over a decade, over 10 years, since I actually publicly shared any of my poetry or any of my writings. And I think that one of the things that kind of encouraged that space was the beforehand. And the beforehand for me was that most of the people in the room, so the majority of the people in the room, had visited the show. And the show itself, so the artworks that Nisaria has created for this exhibition, but also, you know, the works that she's included, that she's created previously, as well as the curatorial interpretation, so the supporting text and the supporting words that went along with those works, that I think that that's what created this shift in people. And there was like this, you know, everyone was just like, you know, being in this space and like this artwork inspired me, and Nisaria, your story inspires me. And that for me is why I want to continue being in this field. I can't imagine being anywhere else, because there is this magic that unites people. And not every exhibition will be for everyone. You can't be all things to all people. But I think that there are moments, and that's what I love about, you know, going back to this idea of exhibitions being temporary. So if you had a permanent exhibition, you would only kind of ever reach those people that really that exhibition speaks to. But this idea that exhibitions are up for a period of time and they change people's life and or their mindset, or they have this incredible experience for such a short period of time that they probably will never forget. And then the next exhibition comes, and then it's a new set of people, and it's a whole new topic, and it's a new way of thinking, and different programmings are activated around that. And I think that's where the magic happens, you know. It's creating a space and hoping that people will come, but also it being a safe space. So knowing that regardless of if you can understand how to read, you know, with air quotation marks, that, you know, understanding how to engage with contemporary abstract art and being like, nope, that's just too much for me, but it's okay, just come and be in the space. And, you know, the artworks themselves have their own energy, you know, so it's kind of that, whether that's, it's an electrifying, like, oh, you know, like, this just energizes me, the colors and the movement, or this really calms me down and this brings me to a place to be meditative, I think is really important.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Carrie-Anne Chisholm after these messages.
School and community youth groups receive free guided tours at the National Gallery. Our education team works with you to design curricular tours that supplement your classroom syllabus. Contact us at program@nationalgallery.org.ky or call us at 345-945-8111 to book your tour today.
Welcome back to Artbeat from the National Gallery at the Cayman Islands. If you're just tuning in, I'm Jessica Ebanks, and I'm joined today by Carrie-Anne Chisholm, a researcher and curator currently pursuing her PhD in curating in practice. Okay, so Carrie, as part of your research, you've recently traveled to Germany to attend Documenta, which is a major exhibition that takes place every 5 years. So can you tell us a little bit about your experiences?
Yes, it was incredible. So I think that there are multiple reasons it was incredible. One is the fact that after many years of not traveling, not going to like major exhibitions, or like having really short trips and not being able to fully submerse myself in art, it was really nice to, I mean, I was gone for almost a month, so it was a really long chunk of time. It was very intense and a little bit exhausting, but a good exhausting. So Documenta 15, so happens every 5 years, and this was, you know, the 15th edition of it, or iteration, and it was probably one of the most mind-changing events that I've been to. Not life-changing, but mind-changing. Mm. And I say that because the whole... So Documenta is basically like a biennale or a biennial. So it's this massive exhibition that kind of occupies multiple spaces in a city and, you know, activates some really incredible artists, usually like really, really top well-known names, and it's curated by a single person that is kind of like a superstar, you know, to be selected for Documenta, or selected for Biennial. But this year, the curators were actually a collective. So they were a collective from Indonesia called Ruang Rupa. And what's really, incredible about that was it's the first time that a group of people were invited to curate one exhibition. And one of the things that they wanted to do is to apply this theory of lumbung, which basically is this Indonesian concept of having a rice barn in a village, and everyone would bring their leftover rice to the rice barns so that everyone in the village has food. And their whole concept is that there was enough space at the table to invite everyone. So what they did as a collective was that they invited other collectives to exhibit. So there wasn't like single artists that were invited. And then those collectives invited other collectives. And it basically became this massive sharing space. And so it happened in Kassel, in Germany, and the whole city felt like a big community, like a big family reunion. And they had like pop-up cooking sessions together, and there were like protests for various reasons, but it was this huge celebration of there was enough space. And now that I, as so I guess the collective that curated the exhibition, now that I've kind of put myself or have been invited into this prime position that is coveted, I'm going to extend that to other people, you know. And that for me is just a beautiful thing of there are enough opportunities, there's enough space to invite people in, and it's that inclusion that I absolutely loved. It was magnetic.
Yeah, I like that idea, and it kind of speaks to this, you know, the abundance mindset, mm-hmm. you know, that it's like, I might not have enough on my own, but what I do have, I'm going to share. And then if we all share with each other, then we'll have enough,
absolutely.
You know? And so it's speaking to, yeah, coming together and having that strength in numbers. That's really interesting. And I think, you know, you're based in Cayman, but you attend universities that are overseas. You know, you're affiliated with Zurich University of the Arts and with University of Reading in the UK. And as somebody working in the arts world, it's important to maintain these international collections and connections, and go on these trips abroad to kind of keep abreast of what is happening mm-hmm. globally in the art world. But you're here in Cayman, and I know that contributing to the local community and supporting our local art scene is important to you. So how do you hope that your work impacts our community?
Mm-hmm. I think that you've definitely hit a massive nail on the head in terms of thinking about collaboration, international collaborations. So coming out of, you know, this trip where I was at Documenta 15, but then also I went to the Biennale in Berlin, and I went to another exhibit. So to basically use my time to go to as many exhibitions and art spaces as I could. And from that, then the amount of connections and collaborative invitations I've received. So I was invited to speak with the students at Central St. Martin's in London for an event representing the Caribbean, so alongside Alice Yard and Blue Curry from the Bahamas. If you don't know these artists and these spaces, please look them up.
Yes, they are so great. We can link them in the notes to our show.
Yes. So being invited to an event representing the Caribbean and representing Cayman and talking about, you know, what's happening in our local art scene was so incredible. From, you know, just attending an exhibition, attending a space across the world, and then just being like, oh, well, actually, this is where I get to introduce people or expose people to, like, you know, the excitement of what's happening here. But not just, you know, those opportunities for myself that's important, but it's also bringing back some of that knowledge and information. So the amount of books that I purchased, and I had a whole suitcase of books, and I've been speaking to artists, and I was like, you know, I have the catalog for this exhibition if you want to look at it. Like, you know, I'm happy to share it with you and share it with other people. But then also connecting people with, you know, what's happening overseas to say, okay, well, this exhibition highlighted these things. How can we activate that here in our space? What are some things that are helpful or useful for us to implement here in our practices? And I think that for me is the most important, is how do we collaborate internationally and create opportunities for ourselves, and I'm saying ourselves as the creative community, you know, how do we create opportunities for ourselves overseas within the region, but then thinking about, you know, those knowledge exchange opportunities and moments as well, mm-hmm. as bringing those ideas to Cayman, and how do we apply them with a Cayman lens, you know, not just an international lens of let me take what I see there and just like smack it in Cayman, but, you know, what are the ways that can be implemented in a way that it respects who we are?
Yeah, it's this idea of think global, act local,
yes.
Right? And it's not about, you know, copy pasting, oh, I saw this great exhibition, so let me go and recreate that mm-hmm. in Cayman. It's about, you know, gathering this inspiration and ideas and connections, and then, like you said, putting them in context here and putting our own Cayman flair on them.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to hopefully borrowing some of your books.
Absolutely.
And and seeing where your research takes you next. So, Carrie Ann, thank you so much for coming and joining us on Artbeat today. It was great to have you in studio.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been such a great conversation. And anytime that you want to have this conversation again, just hit me up.
I think I will take you up on that offer very soon, because there's so much more to talk about. So,
yeah.
All the Coals We Left in the Fire, a mid-career solo exhibition of work by Nasaria Sakou Shalette, is on view at the National Gallery until October 7th. Shalette's work offers a deep and multi-layered consideration of Caymanian history, including those aspects of our shared experience that have often been overlooked or even buried. Admission to All the Coals We Left in the Fire is free, Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Donations appreciated. This exhibition is kindly sponsored by Butterfield.
Today we're joined by William Helfrecht, Collections Curator, and Daniela Granados, Curatorial Support, for a conversation about satellite exhibitions. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for the invite.
So let's start by breaking down the what and why of satellite exhibitions. What are they, and why would a museum want to build one of them or multiple of them into their annual exhibition schedules?
Great question. So satellite exhibitions, I suppose, as the name implies, are off-site exhibitions. They're exhibitions that take place outside or beyond the museum space, the traditional museum space. And over the past few years, I think museums in general have been reappraising what it is they do, who they serve, what their purpose is in society. And they've been thinking about really important issues like access, like diversity, interconnected issues that have prompted museums to kind of reimagine what their role is, as I said, and also how they engage with their public. Because obviously nowadays we have online engagement, digital engagement, we have different points of entry. So going to a museum today is not what it was 20 years ago. And at the National Gallery, I think in much the same way, the National Gallery, I'm going to go back to the beginning, I suppose, to explain this, but in terms of the National Gallery's history, this year we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of the National Gallery. And the National Gallery, at its outset, did not have a permanent home. So in a way, these satellite exhibitions that we do today go right back to the very founding of the gallery, where the National Gallery operated more as a kind of roving institution. We had a series of temporary homes, which we were very grateful for, in different locations. But it wasn't until 2012 that our current site was built. And so from the very beginning, the gallery had a series of programs, art on the road, various education programs that happened off-site. CNCF were very kind to lend us use of their education space. So from the get-go, the National Gallery was always engaging with its community in the community and not just at its home base, if you will. So these satellite exhibitions are really a product of that kind of landscape. Satellite exhibitions can be held in various temporary spaces. They might be in other cultural institutions. They might be in a park or other venues where we can display art and where we can bring art to the public.
Right. Will mentioned access, and that really is the gallery's aim here. And that doesn't just mean when people come visit our site that we make the content accessible to the community, but that we bring it to them. The goal is to decentralize the gallery and its resources so that those that aren't able to make it to our site aren't losing out. And the previous exhibition that we had, the People's Collection, highlighted that, the fact that it's a national collection, a collection of the people, and we want to bring that to them.
So what are some of the satellite exhibition spaces that we have?
So we have partnerships with a couple of other organizations, and obviously with Cayman being a tri-island territory, right, we don't want to leave out the outer districts and we don't want to leave out the sister islands. So, and that's consistent with other cultural organizations across the Caribbean. You look at the Bahamas, they have something like 700 islands, right, in the greater Bahamas. So a lot of institutions across the Caribbean have made great strides towards including the entirety of their community. And so for us with the sister islands, in both Little Cayman and Cayman Brac, we now have partnerships with, in the case of the Brac, the Cayman Brac Beach Resort. And in Little Cayman, we have use of a beautiful space in the Little Cayman Museum. So for those who know Little Cayman, Blossom Village, just up the road from the airfield and from Blossom Village, across from the National Trust House on the Booby Pond site, there's a beautiful museum that was built in 2007. It's next to the old Little Cayman Baptist Church. And there was previously a museum that was built in 1997 that's behind the new building. But in there, we have use of a room. It's a really nice exhibition display space. And for about 4 or 5 years, we've been more informally at first, but now on a more formal, regular schedule, we've been hosting exhibitions at that space. And those exhibitions can be, if you like, a microcosm or a smaller iteration of one of the larger shows that originate at our central space, or they might be a freestanding exhibition that is perhaps more suited to the smaller scale of that space. And for those visiting the Little Cayman Museum, there's actually a wonderful permanent display. So just to give a bit of history about the Little Cayman Museum, it was founded by the Tibbetts family, and it's part of their Cayman Legacy Fund. So, you know, the Tibbetts family are very passionate about supporting Caymanian culture and heritage, and this museum was kind of their legacy, if you will. So that museum has a series of displays that detail Little Cayman specifically, unique maritime heritage, shipbuilding traditions, boat building, turtle fishing. And so those are always on display. And then in addition to those exhibits, we have been doing a series of exhibitions, particularly over the last 2 to 3 years. And we're rotating those. So if a visitor was to head over to the Sister Islands, they might see an exhibition. And then 2 or 3 or 4 months later, if they revisit, we're really hoping to make sure that we've got a very dynamic exhibition program there. So we can talk about some of the exhibitions we've done recently in greater detail. And just going back to the Brac, not to leave out the Brac, the Cayman Brac Beach Resort, dive resort in Cayman Brac, they have allowed us use of quite a lengthy corridor that's just off the central lobby there. And it's been installed with track lighting, so very professional lighting. And we've done a series of exhibits there. And in many cases, we've really tried to choose an exhibition that speaks to or is of interest to the Sister Islands community. One example, in fact, because both Little Cayman and Cayman Brac, hugely popular with divers. So scuba diving, snorkeling, the underwater environment, which is so pristine and so beautiful in the Sister Islands. We did an exhibition called Coral Encounters, and that was all underwater photography of Cayman's reefs, of kind of fish and underwater wildlife. And that was really, really well received. Because the audience there, particularly in the Cayman Brac Beach Resort, they are all avid divers. So that was a really great fit for that space. But as I said, we can talk a little bit more about some of the current exhibitions and some of the ones that are coming as well.
Yeah, you've talked about creating exhibitions around the context that they're existing in, right? And of course, the Sister Islands communities have their own unique vibes, right? Even though we all are, all three islands are one Caymanian community and one Caymanian culture, every space has their own different iterations of that. So one of the most recent shows that we mounted at Cayman Brac Beach Resort and Little Cayman Museum was Beloved Isles, a photographic show of works by 41 local artists that capture the very unique environments and people of the Sister Islands. Tell us about that show concept and what the curatorial design was like for the spaces.
Well, that exhibition was really meant to celebrate the natural beauty of the islands, including the flora and fauna, the landscapes, and the symbolism, traditions that we carry so proudly and associate with the islands. And we felt that it was a good transition to bring it to the airport. I mean, I'm sure I was in contact with a lot of the artists. They were very excited to have people coming in new to our islands, unaware of our sister islands, maybe not having visited before, or those that haven't, are from here, haven't been able to visit our sister islands. We just felt it was a really good opportunity to showcase the inspiration it generates with our local artists.
So you talked a lot about creating shows that really work for the context that they exist in and celebrating these very unique environments in the sister islands, because of course all three islands are one Caymanian culture and community, but each different island has their various iterations of that. So one of the most recent shows that we did at Cayman Brac Beach Resort and Little Cayman Museum was Beloved Isles. That was a photographic show with 41 local artists capturing the unique environments and people of the Sister Islands. Tell us about that show concept a little bit more and maybe what was included in that show.
Right. So Beloved Isles showcased the natural beauty of our islands. It showcased the national animals and the traditions that can be found across our sister islands. It highlighted the landscapes and seascapes across the three islands, and it served to showcase the inspiration that it garners amongst the local talent.
Great. Can you talk about some of the, maybe some of the individual artworks that were in that show or some of the artists that were included?
Yeah, that exhibition, I think also, we're talking about the varied nature of the National Gallery's exhibition program. You know, variety is very important, and diversity as well. And with that in mind, that exhibition was really community-focused in more ways than one, because it was a product of an open call. So the participating artists were invited to submit work. And these were, some of them are professional photographers. So I should clarify, these are all photography, right? Works of photography included in the show. So some are professional photographers. Others are amateur hobbyist photographers. So it was really designed to allow members of the community to share their creativity, if you will. Everyone's a photographer nowadays, right? We all have smartphones, but there's actually a lot of, Cayman is, I think, notable for the number of sort of serious amateur photographers. These are people using digital SLR cameras with fancy lenses in some cases, and in others just, you know, their iPhone or their smartphone. So we wanted to give a platform for that talent that we have here. And so as part of that open call, we received a really strong selection of work. And from that, we were able to craft this exhibition. So in that sense, it's really comes under our community exhibitions in the same way as exhibitions that were launched during lockdown. So I'm talking about online exhibitions that we've done, such as Art Under Lockdown. And that was perhaps the first of this recent breed of community exhibitions that we've been focusing on. And Art Under Lockdown, as I said, launched in May 2020. And talking about giving people a creative outlet, that exhibition was really all about, I guess, sharing what people were doing in their spare time, in their own time, in their studios, in their homes when we couldn't go anywhere. So a lot of people struggled during the pandemic, but that exhibition was really designed to show, I guess, the power of art as something cathartic, something that can inspire you, you know, if you're feeling down. To be able to express yourself is really important. And what I loved about that exhibition is we had artists as young as 8 years old, and then we also had seniors submit, and every single body who submitted their work was accepted. So it was really designed in the spirit of including everyone. You know, sometimes museums can be accused of being very selective or perhaps being slightly cliquey, you know, working with established artists only. And in the case of the National Gallery, that's really, I don't think you can say that, because we've done really a lot of work with these community exhibitions to show that art is for everybody. And also, as I said, there's so much talent out there. You know, we want to bring those artists into the fold and show them, hey, you can exhibit at the National Gallery. You can be part of an exhibition. And it's really inspiring to see artists who've taken that since that exhibition 2 years ago and have submitted for subsequent open calls and in some cases have actually exhibited in our main space. So that's another great feature of these call-outs is, all right, well, let's see who's out there. Let's find this new talent. And then perhaps one day, and in some cases it was, you know, within 2 years, there are opportunities to exhibit on the wall in the National Gallery at our main site. So that's been really great.
Fabulous. And Beloved Isles has recently traveled now from Cayman Brac and Little Cayman to Owen Roberts International Airport. So tell us, if we're walking through the airport, where can we find the show, and how have you reimagined it for this different space?
So I believe it's called the greeting room that it's in at the moment.
Yeah, the greeting hall, the arrivals hall.
Yes. And it's a smaller selection of the original Beloved Isles exhibition. And it's meant to take you on a clear journey, almost alongside the subject matter, where we're traveling through the airs with the birds that are found on our sister islands, to the land, to the animals that represent that, our national symbols and the iguanas, and then moving to the bluff, the birds that reside there, before we move to the seascapes and the ocean. And we're taking you on this journey through our islands, as if you're viewing it from bird's eye point of view, and we end with a sunset. So it's a really nice way to showcase just really how much beauty there is across our islands.
That's very cool. And I don't know how I just thought of this, because when you showed me the exhibition map, I didn't even think of it, but as you were talking about it, it kind of came to mind. Was it intentional that you start in the air and then land with the sunset in terms of, like, you're flying in on an airplane? Is that very corny to say? It sounded kind of like, you know, you're coming into an airport and you sort of start in the sky and it's almost like that plane or that bird is landing. And then you have this sort of terrestrial bit, then you get into very detailed bits, and then you end with this beautiful sunset. It feels like almost a trip journey, as it were, as well.
Well, yes, it is a trip journey. I hadn't thought of the plane, so that was just a happy accident.
Yeah, that was just my corny imagination.
No, but it was started with the picture of a bird as the sun is rising, kind of representing that beginning of this journey that you're coming on, and it ends with the sun setting. Yes.
Yeah, and just to add to that, in terms of the airport installation, you know, this exhibition is not only part of our traveling exhibition series. So we talked about satellite venues. The traveling exhibition series, in many cases, as we said at the very beginning, is about bringing art to the people, bringing art either from our national collection or exhibitions that originated at our central space, or, as we've heard, exhibitions that were specifically designed for partner venues, for satellite spaces. The exhibition at the airport is part of the broader Art at the Airport program, which was launched in 2019 when Owen Roberts International Airport was redeveloped. So a lot of people were sad to see the old airport go, and obviously there were lots of happy memories there, and it was a beautiful space. But the new airport, much, much larger, and very clean and very modern, and I think that's a beautiful thing. But it can feel, or some of these modern structures can feel very empty. They can feel a bit clinical. You know, all the walls are painted white, which we love, obviously, as art curators. White walls are kind of the symbol of art museums, right? But it needed some color. It needed some life, right? Some color, something to brighten the space up. So when the airport was redesigned, the National Gallery, in partnership with the Cayman Islands Aviation Authority, came up with this idea, this initiative of the art at the airport. And for people who've traveled, obviously, around the world, a lot of the major airports have been doing this for several years, partnering art in what is a public civic space, right, an airport terminal. And as we said, they're kind of the perfect blank canvas for exhibitions. So when you walk through Owen Roberts, we actually have National Gallery art projects dotted all through the space. So thinking about taking a journey, you know, when you land or when you depart, you've got this piece of home, right? These cultural objects that are dotted, interspersed kind of within this new architectural structure. So we have previous projects from both of our biennial exhibitions that we've done so far. We have site-specific projects, so artists that were specifically invited to create a work for that space. And we've had a series of exhibitions focusing on traditional Caymanian craft, focusing on Caymanian maritime culture. Those were works drawn from our national collection, so not the originals, but reproductions of works from the national collection. And then temporary exhibitions like this one, like Beloved Isles. So it's really great to see the airport you know, being utilized for something other than just the day-to-day business of coming and going. But also with this exhibition specifically, I think it was a great opportunity to help with promoting tourism because, you know, since the pandemic, tourism has been hit probably harder than any other industry. And, you know, we've heard from businesses in East End, tourism businesses, restaurants that have had to close their doors, and in the Sister Islands, perhaps even more so. You know, they've really suffered. So this exhibition is not only, I think, a beautiful presentation of photography, but also a way to maybe give both residents and tourists that kind of impetus that they need to say, hey, you know, let's check out the Sister Islands. Let's plan a staycation. Let's plan a weekend. I know Cayman Airways had some great deals recently. So, you know, it's just something to, I think, really push and promote our Sister Islands so they're getting their fair share as tourists come back to the island.
And in addition to these satellite locations, we've also been doing several virtual or digital exhibitions, which you've touched on with our Art Under Lockdown show that we first started in the early stages of the pandemic. So is Beloved Isles and are some of these other shows available to view online?
Yes. So Beloved Isles, I believe, was originally a digital exhibition, and it lives permanently on our digital exhibition section of our website. And yes, we, like Will mentioned, we had exhibitions that were specific, that we had exhibitions that were created to be displayed online only. We also have, for our lower hall exhibition space exhibitions, virtual tours that we're able to provide for schools or just those that don't have access to the physical site. And we'll be providing that same opportunity for Nassaria's All the Coals in the Fire exhibition.
If you're just tuning in, we're here with Collections Curator William Helfrecht and Curatorial Support Daniela Granados, and we're talking about satellite exhibitions or off-site shows that can include partnerships with other arts and cultural institutions, corporate spaces, outdoor public art. We talked a bit about online shows.
We were mostly focusing on our Beloved Isles exhibition, which is a photographic celebration of our sister islands. So that exhibition is currently on display in the Owen Roberts International Airport. And we've recently changed out the exhibitions in the Little Cayman Museum and the Cayman Brac Beach Resort. So the show that's up there now is called Highlights from the Collection. So Will and Daniela, can you tell us a little bit more about what visitors can expect from this exhibition in the Sister Islands?
Yeah, so this exhibition, I had mentioned earlier, the different types of exhibitions that we're able to offer. And thinking about our satellite venues, which are obviously much smaller than our main space, the exhibition, well, I guess the clue is in the name, right? Highlights from the Collection. So we wanted to provide audiences with a cross-section of the works that we hold in our collection. So thinking about a mini exhibition that is small and mighty, right? So it really embodies the type of work, the breadth of work that we have in our collection. And so it's deliberately eclectic. So there's a mix of work. There's more traditional seascapes and watercolor paintings. And so I should preface this by saying, when I say watercolor, these are reproductions. So these are digital prints of original works from the collection. And that's partly for practical purposes, traveling. Anyone who's been on the Twin Otter propeller plane to Little Cayman would probably understand why we don't want to carry large paintings over to Little, much as we'd love to. So these are reproductions, and what that means is we're able to travel works that are we perhaps might not otherwise would be able to travel because they're too large, because they're fragile, and various other reasons. So with these reproductions, it really helps, I guess, fulfill this mission of bringing art out to the community. And they're also packaged so that they can be repurposed. They can be seen in multiple venues. So an exhibition like Highlights from the Collection, you know, further down the road, that's a show that I could really see traveling. You know, it could be to the outer districts, East End, North Side, community centers, schools, churches. They're very versatile, these exhibitions, and they're also very well suited to traveling. They're also, the works that we've printed are all printed in standard format. So that makes our lives a lot easier when it comes to hanging these shows. But I think it's a great representation of the wider collection. And given that the collection has grown so much recently, it's also an opportunity to rotate work because, like most museums, only a fraction of our collection is on display at any one time. The rest is in storage. So we really want to try and make sure that we're giving our local artists their due. So if a work hasn't been on display for a long time, you know, seeing it in the context of a traveling exhibition is really great exposure for that artist. And also we can focus on things like new acquisitions. So works that have only recently come into our collection that have perhaps never been displayed publicly before. And there are actually a couple in this show, highlights from the collection, that are exactly that. These are brand new acquisitions that no one in Grand has even seen yet. So I think that was cool to immediately give those works a platform to be seen and for people to see these works for the first time.
Right. So it gave us a chance to showcase some of the greatest hits of the collection. And we wanted to represent it accurately. So we have there on display watercolors, reproductions, of course, members from the Visual Arts Society and from the Native Sons, and featuring some of the youngest artists in our collection of different media and works that, as well mentioned, wouldn't have been able to travel. This gave us a perfect opportunity to bring this really anywhere.
We've talked so much about accessibility in this show as well, and I think these traveling exhibitions and the opportunity to see pieces from the National Collection in places where we wouldn't expect to see them, they're great teaching tools as well. So for Jess and I, who are on the education team, it's really exciting for us to be able to, you know, to have you guys taking the National Collection over to the BRAC so that that work can be shared with students there as well.
Yeah, students and the wider community as well. I recently went over to the BRAC last week, and we had a seniors tour and tea. So that is part of our ongoing seniors program that we run with EY. So we had a group of 28 seniors from the BRAC come through to the beach resort, and we gave them a tour of this new Highlights from the Collection exhibition. And it was a really nice opportunity to, yeah, be able to share this exhibition and these pieces with the seniors of the BRAC, because, like Will mentioned, you know, these are pieces from the collection that don't often get to travel. So having these reproductions and having this collection show be able to make its way over to the BRAC and share the story of our collection and highlight these different pieces with the community there was a really, really nice opportunity. And it allowed the seniors to reflect on some places that they recognized that were showcased in the artwork, or some of the artists that they were familiar with as well. So it's a really nice chance to explain a little bit more about what the National Collection is, that it's a resource for all of us in the community, including them as well, and be able to bring that and have these nice conversations and experience around that.
Yeah, we're excited to create some programming for this show.
Yeah.
I think we have a lot of up our sleeves.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it'll be a great teaching resource for the schools and the BRAC as well to have the students come through.
Yeah, offers a lot for fun, engaging projects to do with this show. So the third iteration of the Cayman Islands Biennial is quickly approaching. It feels like we just had the last one, and the third one is almost upon us. So it's taking place in the spring of 2023. One of the key features of biennials is that they're these large-scale, multi-site projects. So, for example, in 2021's Reimagined Futures, the second Cayman Islands Biennial, that included the Owen Roberts International Airport, Queen Elizabeth II Botanic Park, the National Trust Mission House, and then, of course, the Little Cayman Museum as some of the off-site venues for that show. Can you tell us about that sort of off-site aspect of biennials and how those spaces contribute to the overall concept?
Yes. So biennials, I think it'll be helpful if I just start by explaining what a biennial is. And you've done that by your introduction. But biennials are exhibitions, as the name suggests, that happen every 2 years. And typically, they have an international focus. That's something that we're working towards. We're only in our second iteration, coming into the third biennial. But if you kind of rewind back to the history of how biennials came to be, the first biennial was the Venice Biennale, and that was founded in 1895, so at the end of the 19th century. And it kind of emerged from this phenomenon of world's fairs, these sort of colonial exhibitions that today really are seen as very problematic, but were important nonetheless for almost, I guess, prophesizing the international art world that we have today, laying the groundwork for that. They were spaces and exhibitions that brought art to the public, brought art from an international perspective, generally from some of the former colonies of countries like Great Britain. And so after World War II, you started to see exhibitions such as Documenta, which was founded in Kassel in Germany after World War II, with the first edition in 1955. And then slowly but surely, biennials sort of became this global phenomenon. So by about the 1990s, they had really proliferated. And they're these big global international exhibitions that happen every 2 years. And importantly, they're really tied to a particular site, to a particular city or place. So we talked about Venice. And, of course, today the Venice Biennale is sort of the granddaddy of these biennials. And it's located in this beautiful historic city with its canals and Renaissance architecture, but really cutting-edge contemporary art. And closer to home here in Cayman, two of the most influential biennials are the Havana Biennale in Havana, Cuba, and that was founded in 1984. And I think what is important about the Havana Biennial that we can learn from and that we've kind of, I guess, looked to in some respects is its focus on art of the region, Latin America and Caribbean art, which has been overlooked for many, many years, is not given the recognition it deserves. So we call that the Global South. That's the term that's used, but art from Latin America, the Caribbean, South America. So the Havana Biennale was incredibly influential. Also Sao Paulo in Brazil, that's a really important exhibition that happens every 2 years. And we actually had Caymanian artist Bendel Hyde representing Cayman there in 1996, which was really huge to have a local artist in such an important exhibition. And when the Cayman Islands Biennial was founded in 2019, we initially wanted to create an exhibition, as you said, that is multi-site, multi-venue, but bring some of that flavor, some of those characteristics of these, you know, much, much larger kind of blockbuster biennials from around the world. I mean, you can list them off. There's many, many, but focused on a local context. So it's the Cayman Islands Biennial, and we're focusing, and we have done so far, on local artists, Caymanian artists, and artists of the Caymanian diaspora. But as we go forward, we're kind of looking to branch out and see if we can explore partnerships with bringing in Caribbean artists in dialogue with Caymanian artists. So, you know, there's such talent across the Caribbean when you look at places like Barbados, Trinidad, Jamaica, the Bahamas, and sort of building those regional partnerships. Because I think what's exciting about a biennial is it's all about celebrating the here and now, the present. Biennials are topical exhibitions. They're dynamic exhibitions. They're exhibitions that don't happen in a vacuum. So if you mentioned the second Cayman Islands Biennial, first Cayman Biennial in 2019, we kind of went with this funny curatorial conceit, if you like, which was that it's an exhibition whose theme is that it has no theme. And that's why we titled it Cross Currents. And, of course, themes did emerge, as they always do. But I think what was interesting about the second Cayman Islands Biennial, Reimagined Futures, was that it wore its kind of credentials on its sleeve. It was purposefully politically engaged, not in a controversial way, but just deeply, deeply reflective of what was going on in the world in 2021 and looking back to 2020. So really artists taking that inspiration of this theme, Reimagined Futures, to use their work to share their responses, their thoughts, their creative ways of working through all of these issues that were happening in the world, from the pandemic to Black Lives Matter and protest movements that were happening, political upheaval. So all of those things together, I think, came together to create an exhibition that was really, really interesting and thought-provoking. Because biennials are exhibitions that should make you think, you know, should make you question. And it's a dialogue. So the fact that they're so large, we had over 40 artists in both biennials. You start to get these dialogues and these sparks of connection where seeing those very different works brought together with a unifying theme and then playing off one another. It's an opportunity to have conversations that go well beyond art and kind of visual culture.
Yeah, to jump in on what you were saying, it's a really exciting project because it encourages the community to respond to, well, conversations that aren't unique to the island, right? It's supposed to inspire conversations and, you know, provoke dialogue, like between the artists. We put out an open call to the community, and it encourages artists to touch on themes that they wouldn't typically would have pushed to in their own everyday practice. And as we are also looking to expand and make these connections with the wider region, we're growing this network and cultivating the creative sector to push artists to really become a bigger presence in the wider conversation.
Yeah, and what's interesting, too, about the biennials is that, you know, we're talking about satellite exhibition spaces and having this be a large tri-island project, and there's been some really interesting pieces in both iterations of the biennials where artists have had works displayed in site-specific locations, so not just within the walls of the gallery, but out into, you know, some more underutilized or unconventional locations. So can you speak to a little bit about some of these projects that we've seen within the wider community?
Yes. So we talked about the airport at the outset of the program. That was just one example of a venue that we had selected to partner with for both installments of the biennial. But not just the airport. In terms of thinking about our built heritage, historic structures, you know, you think of a biennial as a very, very contemporary art exhibition. But what is often, I think, very productive is when you put, as I said, contemporary art in dialogue with, say, a historic house, a historic space, a historic site, you start to see things that you wouldn't perhaps see. So in the case of Mission House, and Mission House, you know, originally was an 18th century manse. It was a missionary home in Bodentown, unfortunately kind of succumbed to Hurricane Ivan, but was very faithfully restored and rebuilt in 2007. So for those of us who weren't around in the 18th century, you know, to be able to inhabit these spaces, to go into a building like that. And one of the things you notice at Mission House, even though, as I said, it's been reconstructed, and Pedro St. James we can talk about too, but it's got this palpable sense of history. So it's filled with original antiques and furnishings, and I think that really adds to the authenticity of the space, even though it's a reconstruction. But it's got this atmosphere, you know, that you cannot replicate in a modern concrete building, beautiful as the National Gallery is. So in that case, we had a commissioned project for the biennial, a local teacher and artist, Sarah McDougall, who actually has a very fascinating background in costume design for the theater and for the stage. So she's a very accomplished seamstress and dressmaker. She created, kind of drawing on her own family history, which is sort of takes her back to Scotland by way of Barbados and so forth. So she's got this kind of real interest in history that's basically contemporaneous with the Mission House, or the original early days of the Mission House. And she created this dress that is created out of postage stamps. So these were repurposed postage stamps, Cayman Islands postage stamps, some of them quite rare, and then tea bags. And it's this incredible, ornate, sort of billowy 18th century dress. But it's it's viewed in the context of a contemporary art biennial, and she was really using that project to talk about some of these big issues, you know, thinking about the history of slavery, of trade, and in today's kind of age of globalization, but trade in the 18th century, thinking about places like Barbados in the Eastern Caribbean, and the sugarcane industry there, slavery. So it was a very powerful piece that I think did a great job of melding, or kind of weaving, these historical traditions with very, very contemporary issues. So that was installed at Mission House in Bodentown. Another young artist, local artist, John Reno Jackson, he had a project in that biennial at Botanic Park, which Maya mentioned. So that was, again, a very slightly curious project, but installing these paintings, and we've talked about, you know, how fragile or how paintings are, especially in a tropical climate, you know, these objects that we want to safeguard, we want to look after, they need to be climate controlled. Well, he took, I guess, some of those ideas and thought, well, what happens if I put my work outside in nature? You know, and that's nothing new, but this sort of site-specific intervention, the idea of taking art to places where we might think it's not supposed to be, you know, putting paintings surrounded by tropical foliage in the middle of 75-80% humidity, you know, 90 degrees heat, and almost making them part of this organic landscape. So there's this dialogue between the man-made and the natural. So that was just another project from the Second Cayman Islands Biennial that was site-specific and at one of these amazing off-site partner venues. So that's something we're looking to do more of for the third biennial.
Yeah, Daniela, you talked about, you know, this opportunity with the off-site spaces to challenge artists to maybe consider themes or conversations that they don't necessarily engage with all of the time in their work. But I think something that else that's really exciting about this is that it allows different types of artists to also engage with the project, because there may be people who don't see their work as fitting into this sort of white wall space that you talked about earlier, or who, you know, are creating work that is maybe on a scale that wouldn't necessarily work in a gallery environment. So it allows those people to be able to create things for spaces that are off-site from the gallery. And then people, you know, even who create work that's two-dimensional or would typically go in a gallery, to just reimagine their working process a little bit and explore the theme in a new and interesting way.
Thank you, Will and Daniela, for joining us today. It's been a great conversation about the National Gallery's satellite exhibitions and ways to bring art away from the gallery and into these community spaces. So this has been another episode of Art Beat, a show by the National Gallery of the Cayman Islands. Tune in next week for another conversation on Caymanian art. And until then, visit us at the National Gallery from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday to Saturday, where admission is always free, or join us in one of our satellite exhibition venues. You can see our shows in the Little Cayman Museum, the Cayman Brac Beach Resort, or the Owen Roberts International Airport. See you next week.